Welcome to Sport Intelligence, the Canadian Perspective, where we bring you engaging discussions and expert insights that take you behind the scenes of Canada's sports sector. I'm your host, Paula Baker, and today we're looking behind the scenes at mega sporting events and the impacts that hosting them can have on Canadian communities. From sport-specific events like the FIFA World Cup to multi-sport events like the Pan and Para-Pan American Games, the Commonwealth Games, and the largest one of them all, the Olympic and Paralympic Games. Mega sport events are known for the high levels of media attention that they generate. Yet, they also generate a lot of hype about their potential benefits for host communities. Think new infrastructure, tourism, and economic growth. And with the growing inclusion of athletes with disabilities in these large-scale events, a new area of study that's taken hold in the Canadian research landscape is the potential impact of sports on things like attitudes towards disability, accessibility, and inclusion. As a result, researchers are asking questions like, can mega sport events get more Canadians with disabilities active in sport? Well, our guest today is sport management researcher and director of the School of Kinesiology at Western University, Dr. Laura Meisner. Dr. Meisner's research focuses on how sport and sport events can be used as instruments of social change. In particular, she spent the last decade studying how sport for persons with a disability can positively impact community accessibility and social inclusion. Thank you so much for joining us today, Laura.
I'm happy to be here.
Let's just jump into it. So there's a lot of debate out there about the costs and benefits of large-scale sport events. So for example, some might say that the financial investment needed and resulting carbon footprint aren't worth the potential economic and community benefits. So as a researcher, how do you compare the costs and the benefits of events like the Olympic and the Paralympic Games?
Yeah, it's a really tricky subject. There isn't a sort of straightforward answer to it. And I'm not sure I'm going to give you one that's going to say, you know, definitely host events or don't go after events. Each city, community, and country needs to evaluate from their own perspective what they see as, one, the potential costs, because the costs in terms of economic resources, environmental resources, human resources are massive, regardless of whether you're talking about Olympic and Paralympic Games or something like Commonwealth Games, even down to things like Canada Games that we host here in this country. And so the community really needs to start to think about what are they willing to pay in terms of those different types of resources in order to reap some potential benefits. And I say that because it's potential benefits. We don't necessarily know. And we also know there's not automatic benefits. We know that communities have to invest in the event and resources to create those impacts. And so it's not just something if they're going to host an event, there's going to be lots of people participating. We're going to get these economic inputs. You know, there is a real cost benefit analysis that has to be done by each community. So there isn't sort of a standard response that this is going to be great or terrible for any community. That's something that they have to weigh out.
Right. It's not one catch-all for anything. It's not a given that anything is successful. So in saying that, what does a sport event need to do to have a significant positive impact on the host community or, say, on a larger scale, the host country?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we have to recognize is that an event in and of itself isn't enough to just create this positive impact. We have this assumption that when we host an event, that, you know, suddenly people are going to, one, be interested in sport, you know, people who may never have participated, or people who may be participating maybe do a little bit more. And there's some evidence to suggest that's the case. But the reality is that we have to actually invest in creating those opportunities, resourcing local clubs, coaching programs, infrastructure that actually supports participation. And I say that across the board. Not just high performance sport, but community sport as well, that we have to actually invest resources into that. And what happens often is communities or big events come in and they have this great local organizing committee that runs the event, and that's their job. But that doesn't mean their job also is making sure there's this positive impact in the community, because once the event's done, they're going to up and move on and go
they're
to the next
off.
One, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So a city, community, that country has to be willing to invest in resources. And we found that separate committees that are not part of the host committee are the ones that tend to be the most successful in terms of reaping these positive benefits for their community. So in other words, we need to bring together individuals from local organizations, politicians, people with resources, in order to develop what they want to see in terms of these strategic positive outcomes, then actually resource them and do something about it.
How often does that happen?
That's a great question, because what we have seen typically is there's been this just general expectation. Of course, you're going to host an event and everybody's going to want to be part of it. We're going to build these great big stadium and suddenly people are just going to show up and start participating. But I think we've seen so many failures in that effect. Talk about things like white elephants, right? Stadia that after the event's gone, never gets used or gets used for a few years. And then maybe there's a professional team that comes in and then they decide it's too old and they're going to leave. And a community's left with this white elephant resource that they don't know what to do with it. That I think there's a learning that's happened over the years that now cities are starting to say, wait a second, we actually do need to do something. And so London 2012 was one of the first that did a real investment in a legacy committee that was a model, actually modeled after Vancouver 2010. Vancouver 2010 had Legacies Now, was a committee that started as part of their, sort of aligned with their bid. It wasn't as strategic in terms of creating that outcomes. It started in a bit different way, but it ended up morphing into an organization called Lift Philanthropy. And they're an organization that has resources that came from the 2010 games, and they invest in community development opportunities. Some of those are sport related. Some of those are reading programs. Some of those developing playgrounds. So they're an organization that sort of started a little bit in this way. And then 2012 came along and they realized, oh, actually, we need to take that model and be a bit more strategic about it. Develop a committee that is going to focus specifically on legacies and then see these organizations through beyond the games, resource them beyond the games. So they did a good job of that. Canada seems to be a model of that, to be fair.
Well, I have to say, as a Vancouverite, I've taken full advantage. The facilities are fantastic. The communities that have come out of that are great. So, I mean, I have one small slice that's very biased, but it's nice to hear because that's been my experience out west.
But it's one of those things that's really interesting in the Vancouver case is the fact that there wasn't a lot of hype around what they were doing and how they were resourcing these things. It was the big mega projects that got the hype, right? It was the Sea to Sky Highway.
Yes,
it was the
100%.
New transit system in Vancouver.
100%,
right? And yet they actually did quite a bit of investment in community programming, you know, literacy programs, health programs, Indigenous initiatives, participation in accessible playgrounds programs. And those are actually what have the most positive impact on local communities.
100%. I think it's super interesting to hear this. So I'm going to jump a bit here, but your early research focused on the role of sport events on urban and community development.
Yeah.
So what prompted you to shift your focus to parasport?
So I started doing research, particularly when I was doing my PhD and looking at the role of cities in using sport for this broader urban context. And I specifically looked at how we brought together urban political elites that could be politicians, CEOs from major corporations, to be drivers of urban development and sport being a particular factor of that. And so it was really interesting work because I hadn't really thought about the way events could be this catalyst because, of course, as a naive PhD student at the time, we were told and I was taught all about how mega events are really bad for communities and they're never going to be a positive impact.
Right.
And I went in with that insight and then realized, well, actually, maybe there's another way of looking at this. And so leading up to 2010, the Vancouver Games, I was invited to speak at a human resources and development conference that was in conjunction with the Canadian Paralympic Committee. A colleague of mine, David Legg from Mount Royal University, invited me to come and speak at this conference. And at the time I thought, what do you want me to talk about? How does my work relate to this?
Right.
And so as I started to put together my presentation and then started to delve into the resources, I really saw that there was this massive gap in understanding the impact of disability-specific sport events and local community development. And there was almost nothing at the time being done on the broad context of Paralympic legacy. And yet the Paralympic movement has had that as an agenda item in host communities since the get-go. But nobody was really looking at this. So David kind of pulled me into it and I started to get into the resources more and realized this is a really important area that we need to address. let alone, I'm sure you're very familiar with, the Canadian Paralympic community is an outstanding community.
Absolutely.
Of really wonderful, passionate individuals who want to make a difference in their own communities. And so that really sort of catalyzed me to want to try and do something that could support that passion, that drive, that interest. And I knew that events could be a catalyst.
Right.
And I still think they can be a catalytic opportunity, but nobody was yet talking about how to do that. And so that's where I embarked on that endeavor to try and figure out what ways could we start to think about legacy from hosting these events.
You're listening to Sport Intelligence, the Canadian Perspective. I'm Paula Baker, and we're talking to Dr. Laura Meisner on how sport and sport events can be used as instruments of social change to positively impact persons with a disability. You've gotten funding from SHRC and Sport Canada, and you've studied the impacts of major sporting events like the Commonwealth Games, the PAN, the Parapan American Games, on community participation and attitudes towards disability. What was it about these events that made them ideal cases to study?
Well, when we really got into it was when we studied the Commonwealth Games in 2014, and those were hosted in Glasgow, and the games that were hosted in Toronto, the PAN, Parapan American Games.
Right.
And at that time, what we were really uniquely interested in was the different models of events. It's difficult to study the Olympic and Paralympic Games. They're massive, they're unwieldy. It's really difficult to even get into those games because the IPC and the IOC have lots of control. So we used Commonwealth and PAN Parapan as smaller scale case studies to understand the different models of events. PAN Parapan functions on the model like Olympic and Paralympic. So two separate games that are separated by 2 weeks. So same infrastructure, so some changeover that happens. There's hosting of Pan Am Games and then hosting of Para Pan Am Games. Commonwealth Games is the only integrated disability sport in the event world. So it actually showcases athletes with a disability as part of the main sporting program.
Right.
And so we really wanted to know, were there differences in the way these events positioned themselves in terms of the potential impact on issues of accessibility and inclusion, on understandings of disability, awareness of disability-related issues. Because in Pan Parapan, you could make a choice. You go to the Pan Am Games or you go to the Parapan
That's right.
Am Games. Commonwealth Games, if you go watch swimming, you're watching athletes with a disability and then you're watching a non-disabled event. So you're seeing it all. So we thought maybe there would be some differences. However, the challenge being in Commonwealth Games is there's only a very small contingent of para events. And so it's tricky to really parse some of those things apart. And what we learned is, in fact, the distinct and separate event, so the PAN, Parapan American Games, that model had more impact on understanding, awareness, and attitudes towards disability than the integrated event did.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there's lots of reasons we can parse out from that. You know, one of the things we noticed was that sort of the disability sport events got lost at the Commonwealth Games and people didn't have knowledge. They didn't have an understanding and awareness of it. Whereas at Parapan, there was a greater level of awareness. People would go to the events because they knew more about those events.
Sure.
And so the potential for that. So it really helped us highlight and understand a bit about those different models and the potential ways in which legacy could be framed. The other thing that we learned is the disability specific event did more to actually create a legacy plan. So at the time, there was a legacy-specific committee called the Ontario Parasport Collective that came into being. That group had never met before, a bunch of disability sport organizations, provincial organizations. And here we are, 2025. That group continues to work together. It continues to build sport participation, coaching opportunities across the province. And so that's a huge impact that came out of those games that was very focused and strategic.
This is super interesting. I mean, even this past Olympics, there was so much conjecture put out there and like so much conversation around we should combine and the Paralympics get forgotten. And it's interesting that your research is hearing this. What do you think would shift that? Is it about educating people more about marketing? Like what would need to shift, do you think, in your opinion and based on your research?
Yeah, I think education and marketing are probably the two key elements. And the way I frame this is if I'm teaching an undergrad class and I talk to my students about it and I say to them, tell me about your favorite NHL hockey player. They can tell you everything about that player, where they grew up, what teams they've played for, what their statistics are, everything, the knowledge about them. I said, so tell me about a Paralympic athlete that you know. And it's silence. We don't have the education. We don't have the media attention associated with it. And I always say that to media when I talk to them, because I do a lot of work with the media around games time. And I said, yeah, you call me every couple of years when there's a winter Paralympic Games or a summer Paralympic Games. And then I don't hear from you for a couple of years. So there's no attention paid to it from a media communications perspective in between. Now, I would say that is starting to shift and there is a bit of movement and seeing some more, but
you're a wealth of information. You've been working on this for a long time, rather. How has your research on sports events and parasport evolved over the last decade?
We evolved from the initial stages was just like, what's even happening? To be fair, we just didn't even know. So I think we started from the get-go of what's actually out there and what's happening to this really wonderful landscape where there are so many people looking at so many different aspects of legacy and impacts related to disability sport events. Even things like looking at Canada Games. Canada Games in Niagara was an integrated event. There were athletes with disabilities. And so there's been some great legacy impacts there, where there's now a Niagara Sport Council that actually looks at disability. There are specific legacy programs that were developed out of that event. And those are researchers from Brock University that are doing that wonderful work, whereas there just wasn't anybody doing that before. And so it's been nice to be able to take a step back from just this broad view and look more specifically now at what's going on. What we ended up doing was actually talking to people in communities where events had been previously hosted. So going back to those communities, 5 to 10 years after an event was hosted, to find out what had actually changed for them. Did they see any impacts? What did they perceive as the value of those events having been hosted there? And that was really telling because there were very varied impacts for those who were high performance athletes, because they saw an increase in accessibility of some of the local facilities that they went to. There was additional resources for them. Some of those who were in recreational programs, they were great, but they were temporal. They didn't tend to last very long. So that's led us now to the point of being a little bit more intentional about going to look at disability specific events around the world and what's happening differently with different events. How are they addressing these issues? And now we're looking at theories of ableism. So ableism is a basic concept that we come at the world with what we call an able-bodied perspective. We don't think about those things. We were not educated on accessibility issues. And so we're going at these events to look at lots has changed and they're doing really great things. Well, what are they missing still? Why are we still missing the mark on creating broader positive impacts for individuals with disabilities, communities that need broader accessibility and increasing sport participation? And we would argue, and we're trying to find out whether ableism is still the confining factor. Is that the issue in these events? Because events are so what we call institutionalized, right? They have a very specific structure. Everything's done in a specific way. I use the example of the torch relay, right? Somebody runs with the torch, somebody holds it, like all these things that are very ableist in how we look at it. So
right.
We're trying to look at whether that level of ableism was what's holding events back from making this broader positive impact.
So is there anyone that's doing it well, or is anyone that's fashion forward in this and seeing it coming down the pike and making those adjustments?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say Canada has always been the leader in this, and I think we have, but we're also very averse right now to hosting events. So that's creating a bit of challenges for us. So we do things well with what we do. People around the world do tend to look to Canada as a marker of where are we going? We have federal laws around accessibility. We have provincial laws around accessibility. So that's really pushed us. What I think we're going to see is actually some of the Asian countries really jumping ahead because they're using technology to advance accessibility and the opportunities of accessibility. One of my students works for the Asian Paralympic Committee. And so he's talking about how in countries they're using things like virtual reality for people to understand and access things, how they're using the technology of movement, so robotic movement, for people to be included in it. I use one of the examples. I was in Paris for the 2024 games, the touchpads that were used at Boccia. Yeah. So someone was using a touchpad and they were marking the field of play and what was happening on the field of play. So someone sitting in the audience who had a visual impairment could follow along with the touchpad.
That's great. So not for the athletes, it's for the spectators to participate.
For the spectators.
Okay.
Right. So it goes back to that your question about education, yeah. because it's not only athletes, it's those who come to the event. And how do we then make sure that they know what's going on and are part of the experience, feel included, learn more
Absolutely.
About it? And I think that the technology is going to jump way forward on this particular agenda.
Well, that's super interesting because I wonder how technology is going to advance, yeah. in particular when you look at something like AI. But yeah. it's funny, focused not just on the athletes, but on the spectators and Absolutely. The people that actually want to be part of it as well. So you've served as a research and policy advisor for several sport organizations, including Canadian Paralympic Committee and the Commonwealth Games Federation. So how have you translated the findings of your research into actionable mm-hmm. next steps for these and other organizations?
Mm-hmm. We've done a number of different things. And I have some colleagues in the UK that I worked with specifically on some cool things. We did a documentary, and that documentary was following a couple of Paralympic athletes, what we call a slow documentary, because our assumption about high performance athletes gets kind of turned on its head when we're talking about athletes with high levels of impairment okay. who have high support needs. And if we think about if they have to be at the gym to start training at 8 a.m., then many of them, their day starts at 4 a.m.
Right.
because someone comes and gets them up and they start their routine. And so we journeyed that through this documentary. And that really was enlightening because it showed people that we need to start to think about some of those institutionalized structures. And I use this example again of if you think about swimming is a great example. The events are structured in a very particular way. So if you put a race at 8 a.m. for that para athlete that needs to be there at the pool at 7, but has to go through a whole routine to get them up and ready to go, they are then put at a disadvantage 100%. To other athletes.
Yeah.
But we have to start to think about some of those things. So I've been really trying to translate those kinds of things into usable documents. I meet with people who are organizing events. Sometimes they don't like to hear what I have to say. I told the committee that I met with for the Parapan American Games that I remember talking them into saying, what does an event in Greater Toronto Area have to do with participation in Sault Ste. Marie? We have to think realistically about what we can do with the event. Because at that time, everybody was so set and we were going to impact sport participation across the province of Ontario. And that's not a realistic objective with an event that we're going to structure. Could we do it with the legacy components and the funds that come? Maybe, but we have to structure the event around that. So I'm trying to do that advising to support committees to think about making those goals realistic, localized, and embedded in existing structures. So don't try and go and invent the wheel and so do something totally new in your community, because the reality is it probably not going to work.
Right.
But if you embed it in something you have already, then chances are you're going to do really well and it's going to have this really great outcome.
So in saying that, what recommendations would you say for host committees or sport organizations to leverage events with the aim of increasing accessibility, inclusion, and participation for people with disabilities?
I think the event comes with a set of goals and resources anyway. So an event that's going to be for athletes with a disability is going to have accessible venues. It's going to look at hotels and hotel infrastructure to make sure those are accessible. And they're going to look at, you know, where the athletes are going to stay. So they're actually going to do a lot to impact sort of general issues of accessibility. I think if a host community wants to do more, they need to remove the responsibility of that impact from the local organizing committee and create a separate group who's going to work on the leveraging aspects. And we've said that's a really important thing to do, but that has to be really driven by the local community. Ultimately, once the event leaves, they're the ones that are going to be left with
that's
whatever
right.
is there. And so
that's
they
right.
have to plan for what's going to happen with that infrastructure. What do they want to do in terms of impacting particular things? Like maybe they want coaching to be a focus, or maybe they want new programs to be a focus, or maybe they want to get into schools and educate youth about parasport. And it's a lot of work to just run an event.
Right.
And most of that organizing committee often moves on when they're done.
Well, that's the thing. They're focused kind of in the heat of the fire, getting it done and dusted, and then they're out going to the next one. And hopefully somebody else is going to sort the other details out once they're gone.
Exactly. Exactly.
So then what do you think is needed to mitigate potential negative effects and maximize the positive impacts of hosting mega sporting events?
Yeah, I think that's a tricky question because I don't know that we're going to mitigate some of the negative impacts of events. There are always going to be people who are not going to like the idea of hosting the event, that they're going to see it as a waste of resources. They're going to see it as, why is our community spending money on this and not filling potholes in my roads and that? So I think that it's a tricky one. I think if you can work with the comms team, like media communications, have a good education program, really talk about the potential positive impacts that it brings to local communities. That's why it's important to be embedded in what's already happening and not develop something new, then they see that as really valuable for those potential positive outcomes.
Laura, thank you so much for being with us today. We're used to seeing and hearing about major games and sport events in the news or on TV, but we don't spend a lot of time talking about how they're impacting our communities or even our own attitudes and actions. So thanks again for taking the time to chat with us.
Oh, I was happy to be here.
And that wraps up this episode of Sport Intelligence, The Canadian Perspective. I want to thank you for joining us as we take a closer look at the hidden dynamics shaping Canadian sport. And if you have any questions or comments, do not hesitate to reach out to us on social media at @CIRC_Canada on Instagram or at @CIRCTweets on X. Don't forget to subscribe to stay tuned for more expert insights into the trends and issues at play in Canada's sports sector. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.